everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a positively minded life. In the studio with me today, my assistant, who assists me with almost all of these programs, Stephanie Dombra. Stephanie, thanks for being here today, you know. Research. Let me talk to you about research. Just one second. Let me talk to you about research. Research is, it takes a lot. It takes a lot to be able to find answers to questions. And I received a lot of questions from people from WBAI who are asking the following question. They had started an organization and they had started subgroups that were serving the public. And the idea of these subgroups, as I'm sure you've heard on this station, is to kind of help people with physical problems that they've been having. Now, I've been running groups and leading workshops for many years, so I'm used to dealing with people. Many of you, however, are new to the world of dealing with people and trying to get one particular thing to happen, you know? If you have something really good to offer people, why don't they take it? In fact, if you offer something really good to people one time and they come to see you one time, why don't they come back? So today I'm going to talk about why people don't come back. And I'm going to talk about it in your life in general. Now, nowadays, business is a very important thing for most people because most people are dependent on return business in one form or another. Even friendships are a kind of return business. I mean, or dating is a return business, even though it's not a business. You meet somebody for the first time, why don't they call you? You meet somebody who you hit it up with at a party and you say, oh, what a wonderful time we had. They don't return your call. What's going on? Well, of course, if they would just tell you, I didn't want to call you back because I didn't like the way you spoke about, you know, the government. I didn't like the way you spoke about animals. I don't like your attitudes towards things. If they told you that, you'd say, oh, okay, I guess we're different, you know. But people don't tell you. They just don't come back. Think about it, my friends. Comeback business, right? If you think of comeback business, you know, there's a callback business, which happens in the arts. You go for an audition, right? And you wait to see is the producer going to call you? Are they going to call you and say, come on back, we liked you a second time? That's one. Why don't they call you back? In fact, they don't tell you why they don't call you back. They only call you back or don't call you back. That's as simple as it is. People in the arts learn about the callback business. They become immune to it. In fact, it's the people in the arts who are the most immune to people not calling them back in general. If they meet a friend and the friend doesn't call them, they treat it like an audition. Well, I auditioned and it didn't work. Well, today I want to go a lot more into it. I want to help you get more repeat business, you know, and more repeat friends and more repeat lovers. And I want you to understand the whole phenomena of leaving and why people leave. Think about it just for a minute. Every hotel, they need you to come back. You can't have a hotel that just serves once. I know a couple of hotels that just serve once. They're real traps. You know, they're low price. People go there for the first time. And they go there once and they'll never come back and they'll never recommend anybody. But they're situated in the middle of Manhattan. And so when people look online, they say, oh, there's a place. It's cheap. We'll stay there, $99. And they go running out. Ah, never again. That's okay. These people are dependent on numbers, not coming back, just a lot of numbers. But you, in general, want to build a community in one form or another. All of Madison Avenue is about comeback business. The entire advertising world is to introduce you to a product and have you come back and use that product again. The first magical piece of advertising, this is a great story, was how one word doubled the business of a company. Just one word that they added, and it was Prel Shampoo. You remember Prel Shampoo from a long time ago? They had one thing which was amazing. They had the first plastic bottle. So when the bottle broke, it didn't shatter. You know, when it fell, it didn't shatter. But that wasn't the thing. They had on this plastic bottle this idea that you wash your hair, and it says wash thoroughly, and then rinse, and then it said repeat. Repeat! They put the word repeat on it as if you've got to wash your hair twice. And you know what people do? They repeated it. They bought twice as much product. They washed twice as much because they ran out twice as much. And do you know, since then, everybody's been washing their hair twice. Why do you wash your hair twice? Because Prel told you. Back then, repeat. And every now and then, a shampoo bottle will put on it. Repeat. Well, okay, if it's that easy, you know, it would be nice to have customers and friends and clients and people you meet with and lovers just put a repeat label on them, you know, maybe they'll come back if you want them to come back. Doctors need repeat business. Well, nowadays that may not be true. Now managed care has kind of stepped in, so doctors, they say, we don't need repeat business, we just need, since we have so much business because we're managed care and we agree to low prices, we can get 20 people to be in our waiting room at one time, and who cares whether you come back or not because we're managed care. That's the advantage of Medicare, but most physicians, most psychologists, most social workers, most psychotherapists, most masseuses, masseurs, almost everybody else wants you to come back. Dentists, hairstylists, your telephone company wants you to keep them. They don't want you to switch phone companies, your cable provider, your internet provider, they all want you to come back for more, please. Please come back for more. And what makes you come back for more, and what makes you not come back for more? And this is the important thing, because many of you are providers of something. And if you're a provider of something, you want to know what makes them come back for more. And if you're just somebody who's in the social world, you want to know, why do people want to come back and see me? Armand DeMille here with you at The Positive Mind. You want three things, generally, you know, the three R's. There are many R's, A-R-E-S and R's. One is referrals, repeats, and reputation. One thing you want is you want people to send you people. So let's say you're a friend and you meet a friend for the first time. What would be really nice is if your friend said, hey, I'm a friend of Tony's and I wanted to meet you because Tony spoke so highly of you. Wow, that's a referral. That's pretty amazing. That's great. Repeat, Tony calls you again, right, after seeing you. Reputation, Tony talks about you in a favorable way. Referrals, repeats, reputation. Even as a listening station, as a WBAI, we are concerned with referrals, repeats, and reputation. We want to keep our audience. We want our audience to speak well about us. And we want them to send people to us. I can't tell you the number of people I know who say to me, you don't know how many people I turn on to the radio station. I tell everybody to listen. So the three R's are referrals, repeats, and reputation. And you want to kind of protect all three of these because there are all three sources of possibly having people come back to you. Now, we would wonder, what makes them not come back? So there were a group of people I know who had a meeting, and in this meeting they were gathering a group for health benefits. And if this group did this health benefit series, right, sponsored by WBAI, a gathering of people involving Majid Ali and a number of other people, Kathy Davis, but this one person who was leading one of these groups called me and said, I had this group. 9 people were there on the first night. The second night, it rained, and so only 2 people showed up. The third night, the seven people who didn't show up because it rained, well, they didn't show up even though they said they were going to show up. And of the two people that showed up, one of them didn't show up. So now only one person showed up. But two new people showed up. But the week after that, the two new people didn't show up either. Now, I don't understand, she said. I had a wonderful setting. I had a nice place for them to meet. I bought them hummus. We had food for them. We had lots of discussion and lots of handouts. If I was doing anything wrong, maybe the people would have said to me, I don't like this part of it. You know, I don't like the part of soaking your feet. I don't like the part of all of these handouts. You know, maybe they would have said it. Why don't people tell you? See, now here comes the thing. One of the biggest lessons I ever learned in my life was about this dog. Let me tell you about this dog. The dog eats the homework. Yes, if you're not familiar with the phrase, it's a very important phrase. I grew up with it. The dog ate the homework was a phrase that we used to use as kids a lot, and I grew up with. It's an excuse that somebody makes. It's the excuse that kids would make to their teachers when I was a kid, because we would say, oh, I had the homework, but the dog ate the homework. You know, so in other words, you can't really be blamed because the dog eats the homework. Well, later in life, anytime anybody says that they're not coming back for one reason or another, I assume the dog ate the homework. What does that mean? That means they don't want to come back, but they don't want to say why they don't want to come back. That they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, but they don't want to say that they don't want to be doing what they say they're doing. It's very confusing. The dog ate the homework is making excuses. How many excuses are there? It rained, so I couldn't get there. Right? I couldn't get there because I hurt my leg. All the dog ate the homework. How many excuses have you heard from people over the years? And why do people make excuses as opposed to just telling you plain, I don't want to do it? Right? What if somebody takes you out on a date? And they take you out on a date and they have a wonderful time with you. You may even spend an intimate time with you. And then the following morning they say, well, I'll be in touch. And you say, when? And they say, well, I don't know. It's a very busy week this week because I'm having an audit done to my dog is eating the homework. That's what I hear them saying all the time. Watch out for the dog. The dog's eating the homework. So I don't listen to excuses. I don't really. All I know is you're not coming back. The dog ate the homework. Unless you want to tell me something. So I would always question. But the things I would question would be so invasive, because part of the reason that people make excuses is they want to avoid your being invasive and asking them the truth. They don't want to tell you the truth. Why don't they want to tell you the truth? Why doesn't a person want to tell you, listen, your breath kills me, right? If that's the case, why wouldn't you say it to somebody? Let's say you did go out with somebody and they had horrendous breath. You tell your girlfriend, oh, he had terrible breath. I couldn't go out with him. He was a terrible kisser. I couldn't kiss him. That's what they say to each other very often. Why don't you tell them? Why would you not tell him is the question. Well, do you have any ideas? Think about it, friends. We're going to come back to it in a second. Why people won't tell you the truth about why they don't want to be with you, either in a project or in person, or why they don't have you as part of their close relationships. All right, Armand DeMille with you. It's not easy. It could be any number of things. It could be conscious or unconscious. I went to a doctor's office once, and I sat, watched in the doctor's office. There was a vase of flowers. The flowers obviously got there on a Monday, and I got there on a Friday. And the flowers were not only wilted, but the water under the flowers was filled with white, milky, rotting flower stems. And this was on the desk. This was on the reception desk. So clearly the people who worked there didn't mind. The doctors who passed there didn't mind. And the customers who looked at it didn't say a word. But I took one look and I said to myself, boy, if you treat flowers like that, imagine what you're going to do to me. I mean, you know, how could I consider that if you could have flowers in front of your face rotting, that you're not going to be considerate of whether I'm standing in front of you rotting? You know, this is a doctor's office. Now, I was aware of it. I wonder how many other people got a signal in their mind, and they were aware of it but weren't aware of it. Because sometimes you don't know why you go back. You don't go back. You just don't. One person I know was going to a group, and she was going to a group. He was going to a group, right? He was 74 years old, and he was going to a group because he believed this group of people might have some women around his age that he could meet and socialize with. So he went to the group, which was ostensibly a support group for people who had mates who died, but he was only going because he wanted to meet somebody. The leader of the group was a social worker who was very active in introducing people and being nice to people and being kind to people and describing grief and all that stuff. Terrific information. He said, there were no good-looking girls, so I didn't go back. She thought, the social worker, what did I do wrong? What did I say wrong? Did I have not the right information? Maybe I should have had a better handout. One of the reasons that people don't return to you is because they have a hidden agenda. They have a hidden secret as to why they're there in the first place. Maybe they're there for a different reason completely. I've had people who have actually come to therapy who are only motive for coming to therapy is that the court mandated that they find some kind of counseling. And they don't tell me that. They come in and they say, oh, I'm having some trouble with this and with that and so on and so forth. But, you know, to me, because I have such a unique smeller, I mean, I perceive things. I generally will ask about the courts, and invariably when I ask that question, it's because the court mandated that they came and they weren't serious about therapy. They don't want therapy. They just want to get the courts off their back. Ulterior motives, hidden motives. There's nothing wrong with hidden motives. How many times have you gone to a lecture to meet somebody? You know, in hopes of meeting somebody. You go to a theater to be around people. You know, it doesn't have to be the stated agenda. You can have your own agenda. So one of the reasons that you, my friends, might consider seriously that people don't come back to you is because they're not getting what their needs are met. But their needs are not what you think, but some hidden agenda. And it's okay that they have a hidden agenda. I want a warm place to be because I don't have a place to be at night. You know, very often people will go to church just to sit in a warm place because they don't have a place to be. You wonder why they don't come back to church the next day when it's sunny outside, you know? And you wonder, was there something wrong with my sermon? But no, it's a warm day now. They're not coming back. Armand DeMille here with you with a positive mind. Now, this involves not only you, it involves industry, it involves your future, it involves your friends, and it involves your family. There are two big factors here. People not telling the truth about why they don't return, right? They won't tell you, number one. Now, why won't they tell you? Here's a great question. Why won't they tell you? Why won't they tell you? Well, I'm hopeless. I told the doctor's office, you got dead flowers standing in front of you. Don't you realize the impact that that has on the people who come in here? And she says, oh, yeah, I have to change the water. No. You have to change your mind. It's the entire thing. You don't have to change the water after 5 days. You have to throw the flowers away and clean out the vase. And I said to her, I said, you know, I'm not coming back here because of that. Because I believe that you don't have that kind of regard for people. And they don't care. They think I'm crazy, of course. See? And now there are a lot of reasons people don't tell doctors what they really think. It's because they think someday they may need that doctor. I got to keep the doors open. I can't offend that doctor. If that doctor closes me out, so I may need a prescription one day. I may need to have an emergency. So they keep people on a string. They keep people on a string. A lot of reason that people do that with dates as well. The reason I don't tell you why I'm not dating you is because someday I may be horny. Someday I may want to be, I may be lonely. Someday I may need a partner to go to the tennis match with me. Someday I may need something of you. So I want to keep you on a string. But in the meantime, I'm going to make believe that it's not you, but it's the dog. You see, the dog keeps eating my homework every day. That's why I can't meet with you. I got this dog who got sick from eating the homework and so on and so forth. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. When you're trying to do a business and you're trying to get repeat business, there are two things you have to think about. One is the feelings of the person who is there, who you're trying to do business with, and the other is your feelings. Your feelings. How do you feel when somebody doesn't come back? You get sad. You get disappointed. Well, what else do you get? Very interesting, right? How does the person feel who doesn't come back? Well, one of the things that Stephanie Dombra told me, she said, people don't want other people coming. Get back on here, Stephanie. What was it about getting people angry that you said?
I think people don't come back because they're afraid of the other person's response. They might make an excuse as opposed to a direct explanation because they're afraid of the person's reaction.
But what could they be afraid of? I mean, what's my reaction going to be? If you tell me I don't want to come back, what's the reaction I could have that you don't want me to have?
Anger.
Now, there it is. There's that word. You're afraid that I'm going to get angry. You're afraid that if you tell me the reason you're not coming back is I'm going to get angry. And me, you want to keep me somewhere around so you don't want me to get angry at you. What a funny thing. Let's say you go to a store. You go to a doctor with dead flowers, right? You're afraid the doctor's going to get angry at you? The people are going to get angry at you? How many times do you avoid confronting a true issue that may be necessary for even other people in general because you're afraid of a person's anger? A person's yelling at their daughter in the street, abusing the daughter. Do you say anything or are you afraid of what? Well, one of the things that somebody earlier said to me is you're afraid of hurting their feelings. No, why are you afraid of hurting somebody's feelings? You're afraid of hurting their feelings because if you hurt their feelings, they're going to get angry at you. It's really your feelings you're protecting. You don't want anybody to get mad at you. Well, what kind of a society is this? Well, we don't want to have people get mad at us. Well, the truth of it is a society that is based on limiting the amount of aggression that is directed towards us personally. Yes, think about humans. We don't have the defenses like the gorilla has, like the leopard has. You know, we don't have defenses. We have two defenses. We are part of a group, right? And we can talk ourselves out of most aggression. Anger, direct anger, we're not built for it. We were built for it at one point when we were just fighting fists and, you know. But this society says no direct anger. Now, I am not saying, my friends, that you cannot express your anger. Of course, that's one thing. But shouting at somebody and yelling at somebody in the street where it's inappropriate, where you don't have a close relationship with them, not acceptable in our society. Our society is built on the repression of anger. So part of the reason that you don't tell people why you're not coming back to do business with them is you're afraid they're going to get angry at you, not only because you want to go back to that store some other time in the future, but because you're keeping the species going by not letting anger be expressed directly. Because this is the way, that's why your hesitancy. You hesitate because you don't want to have anger around you, and so you want to avoid it as much as possible. We know it doesn't work, because we know in order to get this society working a little better, sometimes you have to tell people what they're doing is dysfunctional, and you got to suffer their wrath. The wrath is never very big. What are they going to do, yell at you? They can't hit you because you'll sue them, right? You'll have them arrested. So the worst that happens is somebody yells at you, but why such a prohibition? Well, you keep in mind, as a kid, as a child, you were trained to to not get people angry. Don't get your mother angry now. Don't get your father angry. They shouldn't be angry. You shouldn't get people angry at you. You should be a good boy. You should be a good girl. No letting people get angry. Don't get the teachers angry at you. Look at all the training we had of not having people in authority get angry at us. Don't get your boss get angry at you. Imagine a boss getting angry at you and not firing you. You know, oh my God, what if he was allowed to get angry at you and say, I'm really mad at you, but he's not going to fire you. It's like it almost doesn't work. You have to get out of there. But there's a second part to this as well. Not only is it forbidden anger that stops people from dealing with each other more effectively, because I say to you, my friends, if you are running a group, try to see where the anger is. Now, how to do that is very strategic. It's very important that you do that well. One thing that I saw somebody once do, and that was Natalie Garfield was running a group with babies, parents and their infants. And at the very beginning of the group, she had 8 people in a room with their babies, and she's a baby specialist. She said, how many of you thought of either smothering your child with a pillow or throwing it out the window this week? And one by one, they kind of laughed and raised their hand, because they were admitting to being angry at their infant for being such a pain in the butt with the constant screaming and you can't sleep. What do you expect parents are going to get? Of course they're going to get angry at the baby. But no, you shouldn't get angry at your baby. You should understand your baby. You can't get angry when it wakes you up 40 times to suck on your breast. You know, come on, leave me alone, will you? It's tough stuff. When she got everybody to acknowledge their anger and to talk about it in a group, they bonded. I wonder in some of these groups that people are trying to do, where people are collaborating, if they weren't allowed to talk about the anger they felt. Now, of course, the natural thing was everybody would talk about their anger towards the doctors. Maybe you've got to let them be angry at the doctors, instead of just saying, well, you know, that was that, and here is now, and whitewashing it. Maybe you've got to let them get angry. Maybe it's not just about teaching them how to be peaceful. You know, because in hospitals, very often we find a lot of the people who recover the most are the people who get the angriest, not the people who just take it laying down. Maybe don't teach them too much peace and quiet, but teach them a little bit about how to harness their anger and the energy of it. And so they're allowed to be angry. They're allowed to be angry at their illness. They're allowed to be angry at their treatment that they've received in the past. They're even allowed to be angry at you and to be angry at other members in the group. Right? So what if there's one person who's talking all the time and you don't want to come back? You're allowed to show your anger towards that person. But this is difficult, because group leaders have to be trained to do this. I mean, you have to be used to it. And if you're not used to it, it takes a bit of learning. And I'll tell you, friends, after you get used to it, you know, after a while, it works. You'll get it. Now, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about another phenomena related to why people don't come back, why people don't repeat business, why people don't call you, and some of the other rules of society. So we'll be back with you in a couple of minutes. Of course, a little music in between. And
Got a pebble in my hand, and I toss it out into the middle of the Rio Grande. But the river keeps running, don't even know that I'm around. I can throw in a million more and not slow it down. Girl, that's kind of the way walk out that door. Trains are coming, rivers running. Trains are coming, rivers running. Pains are coming.
Derek Bentley, B-I-E-R-K-S, Bentley, B-E-N-T-L-E-Y, Long Trip Alone, Trying to Stop You from Leaving. Name of the song, appropriate, don't you think? Leaving, leaving, oh my gosh, please don't leave, please don't go. You know, oh my God, come back, please, you know. I mean, somebody, how about this, how about this? How about return, you know, don't leave me. How big a message is it?
Return to me. Oh, my dear, I'm so lonely.
I'm so lonely. Hey, Dean Martin. Returning to me and leaving me and je reviens and I'm coming back and that whole story, what's that about? What's it about? You know, and here again, my assistants and I have been doing some research on trying to figure it out as to what is this about. What happens in society? How is this society built? And is there a biological imperative, a DNA kind of mandate that says we have to do it a certain way? And is there a way of getting to a point where we can understand it a little better? Stephanie, what do you think?
Well, I think there's two things. We need people around. We're social creatures, Armand. So to leave means we may not survive. And I think that other piece of...
All right, well, let me deal with that first one.
Okay.
Social creatures. Now, that's very important. We've got to deal with the two things that we were given as hominids, right? There we are, humans in bodies, and there's got the leopards and the tigers and the bears and the brontosaurus all want to eat us up. And what do we got? We got bonding together, right? Now, what as an animal, what do you do when your baby cub goes away? You chastise it immediately. You condition it. Don't leave my shadow. Don't get out of my sight. What do you do as a parent? You live somewhere out in the, you have a house or you live somewhere, and your kid wants to walk out the door by themselves. Well, number one, you make sure the doorknobs are too high for the babies, right?
Well, you put those safety latches on.
What are safety latches?
All the parents that have little children, like under the age of 3 or 4, have these safety latches to make sure they can't leave, that they can't get items that are poisonous
or
dangerous.
I thought those were always so that the husband wouldn't come home. No, these are safety latches so the child won't leave, right? They won't open the doors.
Or get hurt.
Because we know that if someone leaves, they are in danger. And number one, not only are they in danger, we're in danger. We operate as a group. And there's a prohibition against the very process of leaving. We talked a little bit about the geese in Canada who fly in formation. When one goose falls out of formation, it affects the flying ability of all the other geese. They don't want any goose leaving. They set up the cries. If the goose doesn't come back, reshape the formation, because it's dangerous to fly with one open goose wing. You know what I mean? being out of formation and not having your formation and not having your group. It is about protecting the group and keeping it together. They call it integrity of a family. Why do parents have to stay together? They don't do it in nature, you know, in wolves, the male mates and goes off and the female takes care of the babies. Why does this stick together? Because humans, without the weapons, without the tools, have intelligence and they have bonding. They have this ability to stick together. Oxytocin. We have this hormonal system that says we'll do better as a group than we do individually. And believe it or not, it's affecting you. It affects you when someone leaves you. There is a feeling that goes beyond just the personal insult. It's almost like there's something wrong. A person left.
What might that be, Armand? When you say something chemically happens in them, is that what you're saying?
I think so. You know, I remember when I used to work with people who were, there were women who were having abortions. And what we noticed was that the boyfriends of the women having abortions had a significant amount of depression. So we would say, why were they depressed? Well, hypothetically, the reason they're depressed is because there they were siring a child and they lost their child, plus they felt bad for getting the woman pregnant. That's what all the abortion clinic doctors thought. We did a little further tracking and we realized that when a woman becomes pregnant, her mate goes through hormonal changes, just as the male, as the woman does. Do you know about male hormonal changes, Stephanie, since you specialize in that world?
Well, I know actual experiences that men have. There's an actual term I can't remember. They feel the symptoms of the pregnancy, but clearly when the baby's about to be born, their oxytocin increases tremendously too.
And a lot of other hormones as well. Their testosterone decreases.
Right.
A lot of things go on, you know. So, in other words, here's the way nature built it. Woman gets pregnant, humans. Male has a pregnancy syndrome. Just as, believe it or not, my friends, and I know you're going to have a hard time with this, woman gets PMS, male gets a kind of PMS also, because if not, he would recognize the syndrome and not get in the way of it. But since it requires some kind of fight and relief, it's almost like he's interacting with it and they have some kind of a big fight, you know? And the big fight usually results in some kind of a release, almost as if he's getting the hormonal reaction as well. So I know that's a lot to say and probably we should cover it on another show. But males have a response to the female being pregnant. When a female has an abortion, she immediately starts reversing her chemistry. Now, some women get depressed after having abortions, but most do not. Chemistry reverses. Chemistry reverses, she goes back to normal. He, who had his chemicals triggered for the baby's birth, he didn't get any physical abortion. He's still sitting with a baby being born somewhere. And he goes through this lost child syndrome, which I've seen in men whose wives or girlfriends had abortions. They are still paternal. And they actually, it's a point at which they like to adopt cats and dogs because there's some part of them still mandating it. Now, why do I mention this? I mention it because I believe that people are having reactions to anything leaving. And that there's a part of us that's built on the inside that says, stick together, stick together, stick together. Therefore, when we create something, we create it with the assumption that people are going to stick with us, that we could create something and build it in such a way that people are going to want to be there. And so even going out on a date, even going out for the first time, you say to yourself, what would be pleasing for the other person? What would be pleasing for me? And you do all the right things. But who knows what agenda you've hit? Maybe the person's got somebody else in mind. Maybe the person is secretly of another sexual orientation. Maybe the person is, you know, whatever it is. Maybe the person's a felon, you know, and running from the police. You never know what it is because they tend not to tell you the truth. because of this fear of the repercussions and the anger and the other stuff that would come with it. So leaving is prohibited in our society. It's not okay if you leave home when you're a kid. It's not okay if you go even want to go to college. When you say to your mother, I've got to move out, Mom, your mom looks at you and you break her heart, right? You can go, but you're not going to take the chair, right? Or whatever they say to try to keep you back. Are you sure you're going to be okay? Empty nest syndrome is a testimony to the fact that leaving is not a natural state of mind, because if it weren't, and it were natural, mothers wouldn't go through empty nest syndrome. All religions are based on people not leaving. You see, they don't want people to leave the religion, so they keep you bonded through prayer, through meditation, through, you know, through hypnotism, through all the other things, so that you will stay connected to the community. Leaving is such a big issue for people that it very often makes them funny. Because otherwise you would go to a meeting or you would say to somebody, thank you very much, but you know, I don't think this is going to work out. And if you said to somebody who you were dating, why is this not going to work out? Well, you know, truth of it is, you talking about your old boyfriend just kept getting me angry. And I didn't want to hear it from you, so you're too hooked on your old boyfriend. I don't want to see you. I want to get somebody who's less hooked on their boyfriend. Tell you, but they won't tell you. No, you know what they're going to tell you? It's about the homework. My dog ate the homework, so I can't see you this week. I'll call you next month if my dog doesn't eat the phone. Right? Which dogs very often do. And then they eat my fax, and then they eat my email, and it's not my fault. I couldn't do it. I couldn't help it. You know, there's a reason I didn't show up. Now, there's two other factors related to this that I think are really worthwhile, and that is narcissism. Narcissism is a very important thing. There seems to be a rule in life that we protect each other's narcissism. If you have a belief in yourself, I want to protect your belief in yourself, even if you're lousy at what you do. So if you sing, and you sing badly, I may applaud. Just because I don't want you to feel bad about yourself. Because if I really showed you what I thought, you would get hurt, and you would feel bad. And I'm not really ready to deal with the repercussions of your feeling bad. So I want to protect your narcissism, because we know narcissism being a belief in yourself as being able to win people over. You know, narcissism believing in yourself that you are superior or special. I want to help you protect that in yourself. You know, and we do it to children when they're babies, you know, when they're in school and they draw something that really looks terrible and you tell them how wonderful it is. And then you hang it on the wall and say, oh, look how wonderful this is. And so they keep bringing you things to hang on your wall. You're protecting their narcissistic ego instead of giving them a taste of, what's all this scribble about? Why don't you draw a house? You know, why don't you show me something, or at least explain what you were doing here? Narcissism. We tend to protect other people's narcissism. Now, get this one. Very important for service providers, for people who do massage, people who are doctors, people who are therapists. Your narcissism. A patient comes to see you. The patient doesn't like you. The patient can't tell you they don't like you. Why can't they tell you they don't like you? Because if they were able to tell you they don't like you, they wouldn't need you. You need a therapist because you're not able to speak directly to people. People who can't talk directly to people usually wind up in the wrong end of the stick and depressed. They get angry, but they don't know what to do with the anger, so they turn it against themselves. So people who tend to seek out therapists are not good at having direct communications. You should see. I mean, I see it all day long when I watch people communicating with each other and the styles that they have. It's amazing how indirect people will be. There's a truth you could tell right here. Why don't you just tell them the truth? Well, I'm just so used to being indirect. That's the only way to be. So now, a person comes in to see you as a therapist. and you're a therapist and a person comes to see you, or you're a doctor and a person comes to see you, but they don't like you. They don't like what you have to say. They don't like your style. They don't like your what you offer. You may have been a little too efficient, effective. You may have seen what they need and gone right for it. You know, you did not have good bedside manner, it's called. And now, what is bedside manner? As seductive as it sounds, comes from the old doctors. And, you know, the physicians, they would have a way of sitting with you even when you felt bad. And it was called bedside manner because they would sit on your bedside. And they'd, even if you had a terrible condition, they would make you feel okay. They would tell you, you know, I'm here and we're taking care of it and you're going to be okay. And bedside manner is making the person feel safe. Well, if a therapist doesn't have good bedside manner, they're not going to have a person come back unless the person who is seeking help is somebody who likes to be abused. Now, people who like to be abused very often will go back to therapists who abuse them. That they'll do, but mostly people do not go back. But here's where narcissism comes in. Narcissism, and I know this because I've had to teach this to class after class of therapists who were going into the business, and I've just gone over and over again. Your narcissism will stop you from seeing the fact that the person didn't like you. And how do you know the client didn't like you? They cancel the next appointment. Or they don't show up. And then, of course, what they do is they call, or they don't call, or when you call them, what do you think they say to you? By now, my friends, 55 minutes after a show has begun, or 50 minutes after we started our show, do you know what a person will tell a therapist the second session if they didn't like the first session? They'll only say one thing. The dog ate the homework. They will do some variation of the dog ate the homework. My insurance company won't cover it. My this is a problem. I have to travel too far. It's anything but the truth, which is I really didn't like you. I really didn't like you, but I don't have any way of telling you I didn't like you. And so I'm going to give you an excuse so as not to hurt your feelings, so that you don't get mad at me, so that I don't have to deal with the reaction. And who knows, someday I may need you. So I'll just tell you about the dog that ate the homework. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI. I'd like to help all of you who are trying to keep your businesses going. I've been doing business, if you call it that, for a long number of years. I've seen a lot of people who come back and don't come back, and different reasons that they don't. People are angry is one thing. People are afraid to leave, that's another thing. People are reluctant to tell the truth is another thing. People are afraid to say that, you know, it's not convenient enough. It's not worth the money to them. It's not worth their time. They don't feel connected. They don't have it, you know. If they don't have that with you, so what we do, we call up people. Now, I'll call up people, and I'll say to them, so what went wrong? I sent you to that therapist in Rockville Center or wherever you are, you know, and for some reason or other, you didn't go back. Tell me. I'm here to help you. You came and consulted with me, and then now tell me, did you not like this? Did you not like that? Did you not like the neighborhood that you had to go to? What was it? And people will tell me the truth, but they never will speak directly to the therapist, or rarely will speak directly to the therapist. And the truth is, the therapist doesn't want to hear it. They want to believe that the dog ate the homework. They don't want to feel wounded. They don't want to feel it's their personality. I know many therapists where people never come back. I know some therapists who are the kind of therapists where in the old days they were sought out, but you know, and now with the cost of therapy being what it is and not being reimbursable, they have to be stars for people to come back. And I know therapists who can never get people to come back a second time. They're very good, they're very skilled, but nobody comes back to see them. You know, because the people just, but the people won't tell them why, because they're very nice people. In fact, the worst thing in the world is the very nice people, therapists, dentists, providers, the massage person, the ones who are very nice, they rip at your ability to be angry at them. So being so nice, even if you're one of the group leaders working with WBAI, being the nice person very often gets a person from not telling you what's negative. I don't like the incense you burned in the room. I don't like that meditation stuff that you did. I don't like you gave that lady so much attention. Getting them to verbalize what it is, even if you do it on a one-to-one basis. Tell me how we would improve this program. Not tell me why you left, but tell me how we would improve it. Tell me what you didn't like. And if you could get people to tell you what they don't like, then you're really ahead of the game. Because then you could work with them. You could work with them on what they need. So, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I hope this has been valuable to you. I know a lot of people are listening who are concerned about what they're doing in life and their businesses and their personal lives. Give all this consideration. Prohibition against leaving. Prohibition against the expression of anger. Getting direct feedback if you possibly can. Eliciting anger if you can and not getting defensive. Really beautiful. And the narcissistic ego. All factors that get involved with why you may not be as successful as you would like to be. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with more stuff that'll help you live a positive mind. If you want to hear this show, go to thepositivemind.com or send me an email on armand@thepositivemind.com.
Monday morning at 5 o'clock as the day begins. Silently closing her bedroom door, leaving the note that she hoped would say more. She goes downstairs to the kitchen, clutching a handkerchief. Quietly turning the back door key. Stepping outside, she is free. The letter that's lying there, standing alone at the top of the stairs. She breaks down and cries to her husband, Daddy, our baby's gone. Why would she treat us so thoughtlessly? How could she do this to me? Far away, waiting to keep the appointment. She